And I think the other part of Reg X that maybe some practitioners don't know is just the calculation of escrow. If you've never looked at it, there's some good explanations online from the CFPB of how to calculate escrow, just to give you a good understanding, give your debtor a good understanding. I think sometimes that gets lost, and I can always give you a good explanation, but I think that sometimes everyone just wants to say, oh, you're double dipping, oh, this, like, you kind of use all those catchphrases, and maybe you're not understanding the exact issue. And like I said, you can always call me and I'm happy to explain it to you, but I think that if you've ever just gone on that CFPB site and kind of read, this is what Reg X says you can do in an escrow analysis and how to collect that escrow, it would do a lot of people.
And just to sort of, you know, return the conversation to the 3002.1 and RESPA intersection, right? The 3002.1 rule involves filing payment change notifications, which for most non-adjustable rate loans, that happens when there's an escrow analysis. There's a first escrow analysis that's usually run when the proof of claim is filed right at the very beginning of the bankruptcy. And then annually thereafter, escrow analyses are run. And if you have not considered what's being repaid in the bankruptcy and appreciated how the servicer is making that that adjustment in their escrow accounting system, then you could find yourself having the issues Abby was just describing, where you're not necessarily understanding how all of that is working. Just as another very brief aside, RESPA does provide that some remedies, and let me get to that here. All right, and again, apologies for the small font, but RESPA provides some remedies, and it incorporates its own regulations, Regulation X, as well as Regulation Z, which is applicable to the Truth in Lending Act. And so you can sort of, while the Truth in Lending Act is not a statute that is generally available as a freestanding right of action because it's applicable only basically to the original lender on most mortgage loans, the CFPB and RESPA integrate regulations applicable to servicing into RESPA's remedial provisions. And those remedial provisions can be quite powerful. They're at 12 U.S.C. 2605F. It starts with actual damages. And the quoted language here, it's hard to see, says, as a result of the servicer's failure to comply with the applicable requirements. That's an area that is most hotly litigated in RESPA practice. Typically, defendants will argue that, your damages aren't because we didn't respond to your request for information, or your damages aren't because we didn't respond to your notice of error, and so you don't have actual damages as a result of our failure to comply with that regulation. I think it's important to take that one step further and associate the actual harm that is underlying the servicer's misconduct that gave rise to the communication and push back hard against that issue. If you are able to establish some actual damages, that can be very good news for the consumer because RESPA authorizes $2,000 or up to $2,000 of statutory damages on a per violation basis. There is almost no case law finding statutory damages. I think servicers are wise enough to settle the cases where they're dead to rights. Unlike the FDCPA, which is a $1,000 maximum statutory damage per action, which means they could violate the FDCPA 1,000 ways and you still get $1,000 statutory damage for its violation. But what's good about the FDCPA is that it is a strict liability statute, and attorney's fees are mandatory for violations of both RESPA and the FDCPA, which is an important distinction between Rule 3002.1 and, even other typical remedies that we see in the bankruptcy code that are much more discretionary. So we get to tell Judge Mullen, you know, you found an FDCPA violation, give me my money. Don't look at whether, you know, we won on everything that we asked for. You get to look at, it's really more of like a Werner standard, you know, post-ProSnacks. Was the work that was performed reasonable at the time that it was performed, as opposed to whether the results were, you know, as good as one had hoped, or whether the particular work involved, though reasonable at the time, produced results. There are other remedies that are available. I would just note that for 3002.1 notices, stay violation remedies are not available in the Fifth Circuit under the Campbell opinion, where the Fifth Circuit held that Countrywide's filing of a proof of claim that sought to double collect on pre-petition escrow payments was not itself a stay violation, but were it to actually seek to collect that money, it would be a stay violation. But oftentimes, 3002.1 issues, as we'll see, arise after the bankruptcy, so you can get the 524 discharge. I say discharge, obviously that's in air quotes because it's a mortgage loan, the debt's not discharged, but under 524I, the injunction under 524 is invoked for servicers that don't comply with the plan's requirements, and ultimately, if they're not complying with 3002.1, you can get remedies. I'll get back to the preclusion issue. I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking, Abby, and I want to give you a chance to talk. Should we...